The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. On this edition of Century, hemp in the Keystone State. Loyal listeners will be aware that federal law regarding hemp was changed recently, and the hemp and hemp-derived products industry is in turmoil. Listeners will also be aware that there has been a backlash against those changes from the public, the industry, and from some members of Congress. On January 15th, the Center for Rural Pennsylvania held a public hearing entitled The 2018 Farm Bill, an update on the hemp industry. We're going to hear portions of that event on today's show. First, let's hear Bo Whitney, chief economist at Whitney Economics.
As a refresher, cannabis is really three industries in one. There's adult use, medical, and industrial. And then industrial can be broken into three different markets as well, the fiber, grain, and cannabinoid. And different governments and different states have looked at cannabis in general as a tool for economic growth. And globally, it's basically a $1 trillion market. And most countries have been looking at the U.S. to legalize marijuana and reform their policies before changing their policies. But with these delays in policy reform in the U.S., now other countries are taking a leadership role. And so overall, there's roughly 115 countries that have access to cannabis in some form or another. This is basically doubled since 2019, which not coincidentally is when the Farm Bill was implemented, descheduling hemp. And so there's a lot of opportunities for use of hemp. The focus right now is just in this little box here, the extracts, but there's all these other areas where hemp can be applied and productized. And so a lot of the conversation here, a lot of the policies focused on extracts is actually impacting negatively all these other industries as well. And so here's a snapshot of the global hemp total addressable market, total potential market. And if hemp takes just a small share of market, and this has been proven in many different sectors, then it's over $500 billion worth of market share. In the U.S. alone, it's about $145 billion. So after years of decline of acreage being licensed, planted, and harvested, there's been a rebound recently of the hemp acreage. The initial surge that you see in 2019 and 2020 came as a result of the Farm Bill. And there was a lot of people and farmers interested in taking advantage of the cannabinoid sector because there were high prices being derived at the farm level, at the product manufacturing, and at the retail level. But due to the, and the earlier testimony pointed this out, there was a lack of infrastructure to digest all of this output on the farms. And as a result, there was an oversupply situation which drove down prices. And this price decline eventually resulted in farmers exiting the market, but it also created innovations in order to productize and monetize the crops, this excess inventory. And that was basically the beginning of the ascension of the cannabinoid industry. And so the cannabinoid industry, this is based upon a report that we published in 2023, is between $28.4 billion and $35 billion in value. Roughly three quarters of that is sold in legal marketplaces, or at least it was in 2023. It's since changed due to some restrictions being placed at the state level. And of this amount, Pennsylvania represents between $800 million and $1.4 billion, or 3 to 5% of the total U.S. market. And it essentially employs, it's a strong opportunity for employment, 9,500 workers just in the retail sector alone, total wages, $382 million. And there's a tremendous amount of tax potential as well, roughly $50 million per year. Now, there's also an emerging market for hemp in terms of THC beverages. And we just published a report in September that put the total addressable market at between $10 and $15 billion. $1 billion to $1.3 billion was sold in 2024 nationally. And this THC beverage, the application of hemp-derived cannabinoids in particular, helped resurrect a lot of these businesses and industries that had been impacted by the reduction in alcohol consumption. Pennsylvania, from just a beverage perspective, is the market's valued at $540 million. But the rules are kind of unclear right now, whether or not there's legality, but we assume that beverages can only be sold in medical dispensaries. But in terms of the economic impact, THC beverages account for less than 1% of total dispensary sales. So there's this huge market potential outside of the dispensary system. And if utilized in Pennsylvania, it would derive an additional $32.4 million in potential taxes. As was called out, we have acres licensed in 2019 at roughly 9,000 acres. It's since declined significantly. This is due to the fall of pricing in the biomass and other areas. The crop value initially was $2.9 billion if you include flower and biomass. So there's a huge economic benefit to the farmers, but this has since declined to roughly $118 million. $2.1 million if you are not supporting the sale of flower and other products for cannabinoid intent. So 2.1 million versus 118 million, that's the impact that a lot of this federal legislation is having on the farmers themselves. And so there was a change of definition of what hemp is to include all THC instead of just THC Delta 9. And then there was a limit on container content of THC as well. But this federal policy, whether or not it was intended, also affects fiber and grain, because these limits are so strict that even fiber cultivation is at risk of being non-compliant to federal law. And there's a lot of discussion about what to do about this. States tend to either implement a total ban or they limit regulation. The industry is asking for reasonable legislation and rules for testing, age gating, limiting access to minors, and truth in labeling. But if the federal laws are implemented as is, it will displace 328,000 workers. It will reduce state tax revenues, and states aren't considering that right now. And it will increase state expenditures for unemployment and healthcare. So there's a pretty significant impact to the entire cannabinoid sector, as well as the fiber and grain sector. And farming will be what is really the true leading economic indicator on how this will all go. And farmers right now are holding off planting because of there's too much uncertainty. So farmers are not planting due to federal regulations. They're not confident in whether or not it'll be legal. The demand is in flux because they don't know what's legal. Banks are getting out. There's a freeze on opening accounts for fiber and grain, as well as cannabinoid hemp companies. Investment funds are drying up. And the infrastructure, which was mentioned earlier, is just not being built. There's just too much uncertainty and not ability to understand what the return on those investments will be. And so in terms of marijuana, the U.S. market is facing its first decline in the history of regulated cannabis because of pricing compression, which is primarily due to oversupply. 22 out of 40 states are experiencing revenue declines, revenue declines at the retail level as well as at the tax level. As a result of this pricing compression, there's a struggle for profitability. And this is once again due to this oversupply. There was 4,500 business closures, reduction of licenses, and even with all of this, because of the potential change in scheduling, the industry outlook remains optimistic. Now, this oversupply, the green bar at the bottom, is the total demand for regulated cultivated output. The rest of it is the amount of capacity that is being licensed nationally. So there's essentially 10 times more licensed capacity in the 40 regulated states than there is total demand for illegal and legal cannabis. And so this is what's driving this market compression, pricing compression, lack of profitability, and creating externalities such as increased public safety risk and diversion into the illicit market. And so in terms of Pennsylvania revenues, the revenues are basically flat. There was some growth, but a number of patients is flat. And without increasing number of patients, then you're not going to have the growth in the revenue. Legal participation is below 50%, meaning 55% roughly is being supported by the illicit market. This is due to the lack of access, consumer access. And it's a big driver for employment, but it's underutilized. It's not reaching its true potential in terms of employment capabilities because of the lack of access and the limitations that the medical program have. And so there's pricing compression, there's limited growth. So we're forecasting a jobs outlook. We publish one every year this last few years with Thanks. And so we're forecasting flat to down employment and flat to down retail revenue as well. And so the total addressable market, I've just got a couple more slides. The total addressable market for marijuana is $3.9 billion, $1.75 billion in 2025 is what we're projecting. The total potential employment is 60,000 workers, but currently there's only roughly 25,000 workers. So there's opportunity for growth. And so it makes economic sense to expand the medical program into an adult use program. And if done, then there's an additional revenue source that can come from the sales of adult use cannabis that's taxed without having to impose taxes on the broader general public. So there's an opportunity to expand state revenues. And so there's some policy issues. Just one more slide. The scheduling has been a big issue. The executive order really doesn't do much in terms of changing the market opportunity. It just tells the Attorney General to accelerate the rescheduling process. But there's a whole list of items that need to be checked off before this can actually have an impact on the adult use and medical markets. But banking and financial access is key. That's actually driving up costs and hurting profitability, taxation. The cannabis industry, marijuana, is paying an additional $2.7 billion in taxes due to the federal illegality. There's a lack of interstate commerce. And so my key message here is don't expect much change in the near term when it comes to marijuana market opportunities. And so there's, I think in terms of importance, I think the hemp industry could face extreme challenges here with the displacement of 328,000 workers and a majority of that $28 to $35 billion in national revenue being deemed illegal. Farmers in all sectors will be the leading indicator and, look for additional price compression over time due to this oversupply. Now, I talk about the fact that I started off by saying that this is a global industry with a $1 trillion market opportunity when combined hemp, adult use, and medical, but cannabis is very localized and it's very emotional for people. And all of this policy is local. So when you do set policy, just remember to, while acting local, it's important to think globally because if there is additional reforms, then this will become a global marketplace and those farmers and operators in Pennsylvania will need to compete against the global marketplace.
That was Bo Whitney, chief economist at Whitney Economics, speaking January 15th at a public hearing held by the Center for Rural Pennsylvania entitled The 2018 Farm Bill, an Update on the Hemp Industry. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Let's hear now from another speaker. Tyler Shannon is owner of the Shannon Family Farm in Adams County, Pennsylvania.
Today marks the third day in a row that I've had to be away from my farm and my family to advocate for hemp farmers. Our voices have thus far gone largely unheard, and today I'd like to make the case for us. We are undeniably economic assets to this state and this country, and the crop we grow produces safe and sober relief to millions of Americans. Nevertheless, we are about to be economically ruined, and the entire CBD market will cease to exist. My name is Tyler Shannon. I'm a father of three beautiful young children, a husband, a mechanical engineer, a taxpayer, and since 2021, a licensed Pennsylvania hemp farmer, currently out of Adams County. We cultivate CBD hemp, which contains high CBD and very low THC. We grow our crops using 100% organic inputs and regenerative methods. No pesticides, no fungicides, no herbicides. These CBD to THC ratios typically range from 20 to 1 to 40 to 1. My dream since the beginning has been to build a prosperous family farm that I can one day hand down to my children. Until November 2025, I was very much on track to do so, but the recent and sudden changes to the hemp regulation at the federal level will turn my life's work and my entire livelihood to dust come November 12th. I will lose everything, as no other crop is profitable enough to pay the mortgage on my small family farm. I was getting ready to build a new $175,000 facility and hire a full-time employee, but needless to say, that investment has been put on pause. Back in 2016, I graduated from JMU with honors, and I was second in my engineering class. I went on to work as a mechanical engineer at Volvo Trucks in Hagerstown, which is why I'm in this area. There, I specialized in diesel exhaust aftertreatment hardware and software. My primary responsibilities were regarding catalyst filters and sensors of that system. I wrote and calibrated onboard diagnostic software to detect when DOCs, DPFs, SCRs, PM sensors, and NOx sensors were faulty. And if you see any 2016 through 2021 Volvo truck, Mack truck, or Prevost bus, its ECU is permanently encoded with my work. While I was working at Volvo Trucks, hemp came on my radar in 2018 when my wife was diagnosed with a chronic autoimmune condition, which caused chronic inflammation, pain, and the anxiety associated with that. At first, she was prescribed medical marijuana, and while that eased every one of her symptoms, she did not want to have to be high to feel better. That is when I stumbled across a brand new crop, CBD hemp. When my wife tried it for the first time, it was like watching a miracle in real time. She was completely sober, but with complete relief. I knew immediately I had just stumbled into a plant with enormous potential. To make a long story short, in 2020, I had just taken a new position on a new team. 2 weeks later, COVID began, and I was laid off. I had a newborn, a new mortgage, and a new car. I immediately knew it was time to take a stab at hemp farming. I'd seen what it could do, and I wanted to provide that relief to the masses. I took a massive economic risk, and that paid off. I had immediate success, and the feedback warmed my heart. I knew that my work was bringing real people real relief. In 2023, I was ready to expand. When the economy was in complete turmoil, hemp gave my growing family economic security. Using every last dollar to my name, I purchased an 18-acre farm. Granted, only a handful of those acres were readily suitable for growing crops. However, the beautiful thing about CBD hemp is you don't need a ton of space to grow enough to pay the bills. In that way, it is unlike any other crop. Each year, I grow less than 1 acre. Yet that has been more than enough to keep us economically sustained. According to my calculations based on available data, CBD hemp per acre ranges from anywhere from 10 to 200 times the profitability of corn. Granted, it isn't easily scalable like corn. It's a full-time job for one person to cultivate 1 acre. Meanwhile, grain and hemp fiber are barely more profitable than corn and are completely incapable of paying my mortgage. The key sticking points of the new hemp regulation are that hemp will now be defined as containing less than 0.3% total THC and no more than 0.4 milligrams per package. I'll demonstrate how these two rules completely kill the hemp industry. These plants at maturity typically range from 0.4 to 0.7% total THC and almost never less than 0.3% total THC. It's like saying to play basketball, you must be more than 8 feet tall. Under these conditions, basketball would cease to exist. Likewise, a 30-pound bale of hemp fiber, which often contains as much as 0.01% total THC, is going to contain 1,000 times the legal limit. There are so many intricate nuances to hemp that are not immediately apparent To understand these nuances, consulting with experts is critical. That's where people like me come in. I know this crop inside and out, and in my written testimony, I prepared a list of regulatory proposals. In 2018, Congress published a report where they acknowledged that cannabis containing less than 1% total THC is not psychoactive. Therefore, for the purpose of saving CBD hemp, the most important parameter is using 1% total THC, not 0.3% total THC. Countries like Switzerland and Australia already use this threshold. This 1% total THC limit removes essentially all crop destruction risks for every hemp, grain, fiber, and CBD farmer in Pennsylvania. Crop failures are a leading cause of farmers quitting the industry. I want to see a free and fair market where regulation demonstrates an understanding of the biological limitations of the plant and where all can compete and the best will survive on their own merit. If you give people like myself a seat at the table, we can get this right in Pennsylvania. There is extraordinary economic potential. In 1683, one of the first measures ever passed by the Pennsylvania General Assembly was a measure meant to strongly encourage the production of hemp and even allowed it to be used as legal tender. In 2026, I'm before you asking to allow farmers like myself to continue the rich tradition of growing hemp in this state. One final thing I'd like to leave you with is regarding the paralyzing state of the purgatory hemp farmers have been placed in. This uncertainty is already crushing farmers. Do we plant this spring or do we not plant this spring? In addition to that, before the abrupt hemp ban was passed into law in November 2025, I had already invested $15,000 in seed, compost, and fertilizer for the 2026 season. I'm not the only one. This is what all of us are going through. We have been completely rug pulled despite playing by the rules. Please help us right this wrong and stand up for the voiceless hemp farmers of Pennsylvania. We should be talking about CBD hemp trade deals, not annihilation. I will lose my farm if this de facto ban sticks.
That was Tyler Shannon, owner of the Shannon Family Farm in Adams County, Pennsylvania. Now let's hear Cynthia Patron Hudock, co-chair of the Pennsylvania Hemp Steering Committee and owner of Hemp Alternative.
Through my work, I represent and collaborate with a broad network of hemp farmers, processors, manufacturers, distributors across the Commonwealth. Since 2018, I have supported efforts to build responsible hemp supply chains in Pennsylvania and validate the market demand for compliant, non-intoxicating hemp-derived products and ingredients. I hold an MBA from Drexel University, and I bring over 20 years of healthcare experience in very high regulated market operation. For 5 years, I traveled the world helping healthcare organizations improve care delivery and reducing costs. That work sparked my interest in functional medicine, and as a self-described data geek, it led me to invest in a company in 2017. It's a data analytics company focused on the cannabis industry. I actually worked with Bo Whitney at that company. The insights from the data combined with hemp's potential to support human, animal, and environmental wellness ultimately led me to co-found a Pennsylvania hemp farm. So you may recognize the name Jamie Hicks. He's a Penn State graduate. He's a fourth generation farmer. He farms over 5,000 acres in Pennsylvania. Together we launched Hemp Alternative and later brought in Juan Medina, a 40-year specialty crop veteran. As a team, we have worked across a full breadth of hemp agriculture, from industrial fiber, grain, and cannabinoid cultivation, while maintaining a deliberate focus on compliance and long-term business viability. And by compliance, I mean operating within the intent of the law, not exploiting regulatory gaps to market intoxicating hemp. We cultivate hemp, we conduct research and development, and we produce and distribute a limited line of products in both wholesale and retail markets. We maintain research and development partnerships in support of evidence-based decisions with Stroudwater Research Centers, Soil and Water Impacts, Thomas Jefferson University on fiber alternatives, and Penn State on cultivar performance trials. Our cannabinoid products are developed with subject matter expertise from osteopathic physicians, compounding pharmacists, and a physician assistant who's trained in culinary medicine. So opportunities like this come only a few times in your life, as you have mentioned. It's an emerging market, and it's a chance to start a small business that makes a strategic difference. And yes, as my husband would say, you had to pick an industry with a regulatory hotbed. So diversification mitigates risk. And one vertical produces revenue, we reinvest that into another vertical. So we have a long game here, right? So it's approval of grain and seed use, it's processing pathways for promising fiber applications, and it's acceptance of non-intoxicating cannabinoids so we can realize the benefits of simple plant-based ingredients. For the first time, my work became deeply focused on Pennsylvania, and I had, you know, a career of national and international market experience. But once I stepped into the dirt and embraced Pennsylvania agriculture, it really took my passion, and I want to preserve these farmlands. I want to create Pennsylvania jobs, and I want to be Pennsylvania to be back to that hemp leader that it was one day. Amanda, I understood there was actually a hotline for farmers, a suicide hotline for dairy farmers. And I thought, wow, I don't want you to stop farming dairy, but could we at least diversify and give them a new crop that maybe they could use to generate, you know, funds to hang on to their farms? So when the steering committee pushed to allow the growers to sell non-intoxicating hemp products to the cannabinoids to the medical marijuana program, I thought, perfect, that was going to be perfect. I knew it was a small step, it was limited to only a few, but it was absolutely in the right direction. But of course, in hemp, there's no easy button. And so while we were pushing sort of to move our product here within the state of Pennsylvania, there were unregulated markets, right? So there's unregulated retail markets. And that triggered the Department of Health to raise gates around compliant hemp growers just trying to participate in the medical marijuana market that we worked so hard to open. So, you know, my testimony is a bit of a plea. Compliant growers are slipping backwards, and without a course of correction, we're losing the responsible industry we worked so hard to build. So what can you do? Recognize hemp is not one market. It's multiple markets. There's this fiber market. There's a grain market. There's a non-intoxicating wellness market, and there's an intoxicating market. So each one has a different risk profile, and we need rules and regulations around each risk profile. Realize that the plant-focused rules alone do not protect consumers. We bend over backwards as farmers to meet all of the regulations, and then still these products get into the retail market. We need minimal age requirements, robust testing for contaminants and potency, truthful, consistent labeling and packaging, and reasonable potency caps that are crafted by subject matter experts. Hear us on our serious concern about the recent federal legislative language, and that narrowing the definition of hemp, sort of overbroad federal regulations, will destabilize compliant Pennsylvania supply chains, and it will halt rural investment. Regulatory certainty is your economic development tool. So in closing, I envision a Pennsylvania adult use market that incentivizes medical marijuana and adult use producers to collaborate with Pennsylvania hemp growers and processors to meet the demand of non-intoxicating ingredients and products. This approach would keep revenue in the state, allow the hemp industry to reinvest those proceeds into new product development, but to include expanding our grain and our seed markets, advancing our fiber applications, and building novel products, supply chains, and jobs across the Commonwealth.
That was Cynthia Patron-Hudock, co-chair of the Pennsylvania Hemp Steering Committee and owner of Hemp Alternative, speaking January 15th at a public hearing held by the Center for Rural Pennsylvania entitled The 2018 Farm Bill, an update on the hemp industry. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Century of Lies is a volunteer production for community radio and syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's audio port service. Please support public media and local community radio. Become members. Become volunteers. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this
for
is
the
Doug
Drug
McVeigh
Truth Network,
so
this is Doug McVeigh
so
asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.